It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Oh, hi. I didn't see you there. Welcome. It doesn't really work with our podcast, but I feel like I want to do more of that, where it's like we look like we're doing something else. It's like, oh, hi. Wow. You just stepped into our podcast. Could have knocked first, but whatevs. You know what this week's been?
What has this week been? No, what has it been?
Enlightening.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sure. How so for you?
I was going to say, but I know for a fact you don't know any of the reasons I find it enlightening. So I don't know, but maybe you did. I have had essentially a cascade of revelations about myself tied into my therapy and other things. And by and large, it's been very cool. I have a real thing about, you know, learning more about myself. 'Cause I have what the professionals refer to as an enormous ego.
Oh.
So I like learning new things, but this one has been crazy lately. There's been a lot of things I have assumed truths about both myself and the world for my whole life, and I'm now realizing, oh no, those are due to very specific circumstances related to me and are neither universal nor necessarily good.
Oh, interesting.
So it's just the happy side of like, oh, your whole life was a lie in this way. Like, it's not quite that, but it's like, I have always operated under certain axioms that I'm now like, I think those are just based in like what I was experienced as I was growing up and all that, and it's not necessarily true or good for me. And I didn't notice until I got old enough to find a dissonance in my head. And now I'm realizing, and it's really funny because it's some of it comes out in therapy, but then like the biggest revelation of this week came to me an hour before therapy while I was in the shower. Because of course that's how things work.
Yeah.
I'm also learning. This is an interesting thing, and I want to throw this out there to the world as good advice. People who are going to therapy, who have friends who are also going to therapy or who might go to therapy, assuming you trust your friends and everything, talk about your experiences in therapy and the things you're learning on, or the things you're learning and the things you're working on. And I'll tell you why. Sometimes it might be the same stuff, and then you can talk about it, and that's great. But sometimes it's not the same stuff, but it puts ideas in people's head that later they can use. I'm trying to avoid any specifics for just a variety of reasons, but a long time ago, I have a relative who goes to therapy, and they were talking about their experience, and it sounded great for them. It absolutely was like not the kind of stuff that I needed, but for them, great, because we're different people and whatever. But it got in my head, and it's something I have kept sort of in my mind, and recently it has come into play for me, and I only sort of realized it because I remembered talking to them about it.
Interesting.
And I think, and I've had this experience several times with a friend of mine too. I think it's just really useful to get that sort of outside stimulus. And also, especially because these are presumably people that you care about, so often it's very interconnected. Because I know in my therapy, I have to talk a lot about specific relationships in my life.
Right.
And so sometimes those relationships are like, and I happen to know this person's going to therapy and dealing with this stuff, so this could be related. So I think that is a useful thing to do. People should do that. So that's your homework, everybody. Talk to people about your therapy and their therapy. You're welcome. Sorry, somebody's blowing up my phone. I just got to make sure it's not. All right, no. Okay. Thank you, Zabby. That was actually the one really bad part this week, was the storm. You know, the storm we had?
Yeah.
I had a very rough night. Because one friend who I was texting about it happened to use the phrase, from what I've heard, it could be as bad as the derecho.
Yeah.
And I immediately lost my shit because I remember the derecho and I remember that I lost power for 3 days and that I was really unable to cope. And so I was suddenly absolutely freaked out that that was going to happen again. Luckily, one, I was aware of this and told my wife, and my wife worked pretty hard to sort of keep me distracted and not losing my mind that night. And two, turned out to be absolute bullshit. Well, and actually my brother too. Yeah. I mean, in certain places it was really bad, but for us, and like, in real time, it was hilarious. I remember around 9 o'clock, I'm looking at the radar and I'm like, okay, we're just entering the storm section and it's going to peak around 11. And then by like 1 a.m., it should be passed. And then I checked again at 10 and it was already passed. But yeah, the damage we got from the storm was we had a 1x4 board that was leaning up against the porch. And it fell down.
Oh.
That was it.
Hurricane Bill.
Yep.
my dad lost power, had some significant damage down the farm. We went down there and looked at the damage on the farm. And an old corn crib had been picked up off of its foundations and turned completely over.
Wow. Yeah. And I don't want to downplay, like, the storm system was very bad, and particularly south of us, like Missouri, got a lot of bad shit happening. But we, and again my brother, who was also in the path of it up in Mankato, Minnesota, we just happened to be, there is something charmed about Iowa City.
Yeah, it, like, seems like it.
And there are definitely exceptions. I mean, there was the year the tornado went down Burlington.
Right.
But in general, storms sort of miss us.
They go around us a lot of times.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. It's very odd.
We had someone's vinyl siding in our backyard, but our house was fine.
A friend's mom in Council Bluffs was fine, except some of the siding came off.
Yeah.
So I spent that night really freaked out that it was going to be lose power and we'd be days without. And I was like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, none of that happened.
Yes, thank goodness.
My dad, by the way, is 100 miles west of Tony and me. And he's also, I'd say, 40 miles south. You know, like you were saying, in Missouri, they had a lot of trouble. He's only about an hour from the Missouri border. So
he also famously likes to tempt fate. He likes to go out when it's windy and yell at the sky and be like, is that all you got? Bring it.
Yeah. He likes to pull a Lieutenant Dan on the storm.
Exactly. In college, my first year, there was my first experience with an honest to goodness blizzard. Mm. And it was bad. It was wind and snow for days. And like, I mean, we must have gotten 2 or 3 feet of snow. We had drifts that were like 8 feet in places. And we were all on campus. And I had no experience with this because I came from the Northwest. And my best friend at the time had no experience because he came from Massachusetts, which at the time, like nowadays, Eastern Seaboard gets shit tons of snow. But back in those days, not so much. So it was very new to both of us. And I remember one point being outside and we were trying to get through it, and he just stops in a parking lot and just starts yelling. It's like, is that all you got? And we're all just like, shut up, you're gonna make the blizzard mad. Because it was the kind of thing where we'd go between buildings, and when we got to the other building, we'd have to go into the bathroom and take our scarves off and stuff, and then gently put warm water on our face. Like, it was terrible. Hello everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that Cosmopolitan once referred to as the Snarf and Orko of the podcasting world. I'm not going to tell you which is which, but if you think about it, I'll bet you know. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 562.
See, you have that look on your face. I can't tell if you're trying to figure out which of us is Orko and which of us is Snarf, or if you're trying to remember who Orko and Snarf are.
That last one, yeah.
Yeah. They are the comic relief characters from 80s cartoons, respectively, He-Man and the Masters of the Universe and Thundercats.
Oh.
You know, in the 80s, they always had that one, like, small character who couldn't really do anything, but was always, like, getting in trouble and hanging out with the heroes, and they usually had their own theme music that was kind of goofy.
Okay.
It was them.
Oh. Okay.
For those of you just joining us, happy holidays. We've put out the trees and KitchenAid mixers just for you.
Mm-hmm.
We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people write in, not as many as we need, but people write in with emails of things they want us to know, things they want to ask us, things they want us to talk about, things they're angry about. I don't know. Stuff. whatever you want, we don't censor here. The hat, however, decides whether or not it wants to forward it on to William and I, and then we read them on the air and talk about them if we feel like it. So how long has it been? We've been recording not on the right days so much lately. I've lost track. But last time we recorded on a different day so I could have lunch with a friend who listens to podcasts, who shall not be named, because it's not one of the people that we talk about. And we found out together that historically, a therapist we each used to see in the past that was of significance to us was the same person.
Oh.
And that was really weird to find out. Also, that therapist was nuanced enough that their treatment of the two of us seems like it was incredibly different from each other. So that's kind of cool.
That's interesting. Yeah,
that was really funny. They said something that was kind of specific in reference, and I was like, we've had this talk. Your therapist wasn't named such and such. And she was like, yeah. I was like, holy crap, that was my therapist. So that was funny.
Yeah, that is funny.
No, I think we did record on Wednesday last week, so it actually has been a week for us.
Yes, it has.
How's the week been?
Abby and I saw, so in 2019, Netflix had a holiday animated thing called, I don't know if it's called Klaus or Klaus, K-L-A-U-S. I don't remember it at all. Like, I don't remember even seeing it as an option to watch.
You did a lot of drugs in 2019, so.
I only know it was 2019 because that's the date that's on it, you know, when you go to try to watch it. So I was like, oh, well, we've never seen this before. Never even heard of it. We watched that. And it was pretty good. Jason Schwartzman does a voice of a character that 15 or 20 years ago would have been done by David Spade, but he does a good job.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's going to weigh on my mind. I might have to watch this thing now just to see what that is.
Well, maybe I'm the only one, but I was just driven to distraction with, like, I know exactly how David Spade would have said that line or whatever, because it's like, I don't know, somehow this character was
like,
I don't know.
I'm having trouble connecting the dots just from the concept, but David Spade and Jason Schwartzman are iconic enough that I absolutely believe it's a thing you could tell by watching it. I just, in my head, can't manifest what that's like. So I'm like, well, I'm really curious now.
Schwartzman, I mean, it was, he wasn't like doing a David Spade impression or something. It's just
the character fit. No,
you know, and Schwartzman did a good job.
At this point, I think of Schwartzman as Schwartzman is to Wes Anderson as Johnny Depp is to Tim Burton.
Right.
And Wes Anderson would full on punch David Spade in the throat if he tried to be in one of his movies anytime, at any time in history and present and future. So I'm having trouble, but I mean, Schwartzman is also a very good actor with a lot of range and stuff. So,
oh yeah. And he did a great job in this, but I mean, and to be fair, if this animated special or whatever was made 15 or 20 years ago, and they'd cast, you know, think of Emperor's New Groove. And if they had cast, instead of J.K. Simmons,
the one good David Spade vehicle, from what I've heard.
Yeah. If instead of J.K. Simmons and Jason Schwartzman, you cast John Goodman and David Spade in those same roles, it would have worked completely. Because the types of characters and the dynamics between them were very similar. Maybe that's part of why I didn't really think so much of John Goodman as I did of David Spade in that role, but whatever. Mm. Norm MacDonald voiced a character in it.
Oh.
I don't know if this was one of his last things that he ever did, but it was kind of fun to hear his voice in there. And Joan Cusack voiced a character, which was...
I love Joan Cusack.
Yeah, so she was.
That not was so great. Much her brother.
Well, it was the whole thing was really good. I mean, it's gonna be something that we're gonna try to watch every year with a lot of other things that we watch every year because we thought
there's
it was that
a
good.
There's a few sneaky ones in there. I recently watched a Christmas themed episode of Actually, and they made references to certain like holiday specials and films that were just in the last few years, and some of them were on Netflix. I don't think they push them as hard, or at least I'm not in a position to experience them, which is the thing right now. My complete and total news blackout continues. So I don't know shit about what's going on in not only just in current events but pop culture and any of that stuff.
Yeah, as you know, when I was going through recovery, I cut off a lot of stuff because I needed to keep my heart rate down. I have snuck into the news here and there since, but not very much. So I'm also not very well informed about anything right now.
I'm gonna see how long I can last. And the fact that my wife still tends to keep up on generally on current events means it could be indefinite, but I'm like, I don't want to mess with it.
Yeah,
it's working so well right now. I do feel like at some point I will break, but
well, Klaus or whatever it's called, it's on Netflix. I recommend it. It's a Santa Claus origin story type of thing, which I actually find those fascinating because I don't know why I do. I just do. Santa Claus, you know, the American Santa Claus is, even though it borrows elements from previous incarnations of Father Christmas and whatever, it's really its own thing. So there's plenty of room to make up some origin story for Santa Claus. And so lots of people have. L. Frank Baum did. Rankin and Bass took a crack at it.
I was going to say, ever since the freaky pagan one where he was raised by lions, I don't want another one.
So
do you remember that one with Ack the Great?
Yeah, that was from... L. Frank Baum wrote that, the guy that did Wizard of Oz, that's his story. And Rankin and Bass, yeah, Rankin and Bass did a version of that, but then Rankin and Bass did Santa Claus is Coming to Town, which was a little different.
Rankin and Bass has done 2 or 3 or 12 of them. But ever since the one where he fucking was raised by lions and the fairies decide to bestow the mantle of immortality on him.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, you win. We're done. That's the only origin I need.
Baum came up with that. And so this is another one of those, and it's very clever and it's very fun. And I just recommend it to anybody. I mean, maybe you won't like it, but it might be something that you add to your Christmas watch list. We also watched the Jim Carrey Disney animated Christmas Carol.
Really?
Yeah. Which I've seen before.
I've heard that's horrifying.
Well,
I've heard that's like the Polar Express of Dickensian tales.
It is kind of. The thing is, and the reason we watched it was because I had seen it one time before, and it's probably, of all of the adaptations I've seen, it's probably the truest to the original story. And I really like that about it a lot. There's added stuff for Disney, you know, but there's only one place in the whole thing where that added stuff is really annoying to me personally. And the rest of it's like actually very entertaining, but yes, the animation is creepy. Yeah. It's creepy. And it's not something, I mean, I think it would scare children, not just with how it looks, but a lot of things that happen in it. I mean, it sort of doubles down on the horror a little bit.
Various versions of Christmas Carol scared the shit out of me when I was
young. Yeah.
And we had a lot of them because we had a lot of there's contention in our house as to which was the best.
I see.
Some were hardcore into George C. Scott. I was very much the Albert Finney musical one. But to be fair, when I was in sixth grade, I played Bob Cratchit in that musical version. So I was partial to that, but that one also scared me. And then the most terrifying version ever, An American Christmas Carol with Henry Winkler as Scrooge. And speaking of shit that would never happen now, The Ghost of Christmas Future, not cloaked with no face, but just a black dude in a leisure suit with a big old gold chain. And his arrival is announced by Ebenezer's 19th century radio suddenly playing on its own this strange music that was very clearly disco. I mean, yes, in An American Christmas Carol is Henry Winkler and is in America, but it's still like 19th century or so. And all that. And Christmas Future, he wakes up and the radio turns itself on and starts playing disco. And then this black dude in a leisure suit shows up.
When was this made?
I mean, probably the 70s, maybe the 80s. Weird. Right in there. It was probably made for TV. And nowadays, my analysis, of course, is like, oh my God, there are so many fucked up things about this. But even as a child, it just didn't feel good. Something felt wrong. And it's the only fucking part of the whole thing I remember.
Wow. That is weird. I had never even heard of that.
And I keep saying black dude. I'm pretty sure it was a famous actor of the time, but I don't know his name. Yeah. I don't know his name. It was amazing.
Well, I like Dickens' Christmas. I mean, I like the original piece that he wrote. I think it's brilliant, and you know, Dickens was good at ghost stories anyway, and putting it in the context of Christmas or whatever was just genius. So I do like watching Christmas Carol adaptations, but I, you know, sometimes I would like it to be truer to what he wrote. And the thing is, the Disney one with Jim Carrey is very true to what he wrote. I mean, it's ridiculously accurate.
Yeah.
And so it's fun to watch that way.
I'm fucking sick of it. It goes with Romeo and Juliet and I don't know, other ones that I'm like, you know what? We've adapted it 8,000 times. We are not going to get anything new out of this. Stop. Write something original. This was just coming up recently because apparently the Sondheim West Side Story is very good. And I'm like, even if you could guarantee me it is the best version of West Side Story that I have ever seen or ever will see, I don't care. Like, I've done it so many times. And honestly, I didn't like it in the first place.
Oh.
And yeah, I don't think I've ever seen fucking that. Romeo and Juliet, which I'm also super sick of, because to quote a very wise man, that's just a play about assholes. No. We watched some stuff.
Okay. Yeah, tell me about your week.
We're getting into season 2 of Witcher.
Oh, yeah, we started watching that, too.
Yes, we are 3 episodes in. Didn't particularly care for the 3rd episode. It was a lot of machinations, which mostly involved the assholes being assholes. But in general, I think we both feel we kind of like this season better so far. Mm. It helps that it's a continuous story. The first season was based off of the original Witcher book, which was just a bunch of short stories. And they sort of cobbled them together in a way. This is based off of the first of the actual novel series. So it's like a plot. It's really weird for me, though, as somebody who put a couple hundred hours into Witcher 3, which is the same setting, but like the stories are different in ways. But this is I don't like The Witcher. Conceptually, not a fan. Geralt of Rivia is the biggest Mary Sue character that has existed since the original Mary Sue character. It's also the world is medieval Europe, heavy on the misogyny and classism, and it's gross and horrible, and everyone's awful. But there is a robustness and a realness to the setting that just sucks you in.
Mm.
And especially the TV show. I don't know what it is. The TV show's magic. I love the TV show, even though I hate what it's based off of. And I didn't particularly like the video games. I have no interest in reading the books. But the TV show just does something. I don't know. And I think that's what it is. I think there has been so much detail and thought put into the setting that it feels so real.
Mm.
And that gets me. I think that might be what's going on. But I'm in a place now where I also had that with the video game. I spent so much time living in that world. And so it's so weird to be watching this and like, I have lots more information, sometimes plot and character related, but sometimes just setting related. Mm. They'll say things and like, that will mean more to me than it will to Trish, because I know what they're referring to and all that. And at the same time, they do stuff that contradicts. And some of it, I'm like, oh, that makes sense. It's TV. We got to do that. Some of that, I'm like, oh, they're clearly going in different directions. Some of it, I'm like, I have no idea why they bothered to change that. They changed a syllable of a word that they used for a thing. And I'm like, I have no idea why we did that. But it's very weird. So it's a very surreal experience for me to watch. And also throws me sometimes, because I'm like, I saw a character and I'm like, wasn't that guy dead? And then I'm like, or was that in the video game? Or was that in a flashback? Or I'm like, I have personally watched that guy get killed at least three times, and I'm not sure any of them were in the TV show.
Mm.
But I don't know for sure. Like, so that throws me a little bit. But it's been interesting. I also have been making a very personal journey to act as a cautionary tale for the rest of you all. I have been watching the VHS movies. Specifically the V/H/S movies. Okay. And I have watched them so that I can let you all know, don't watch them.
Don't watch them. Okay.
No. They are a series of found footage horror hooked together with the very sort of rough concept that, like, VHS tapes are evil, I guess, basically. They have, like, an overarching story that frames it, but it doesn't make a lot of sense, and it's very vague. And they started really as a thing where some guys who direct horror movies were like, let's just make an anthology. And they just called up people and they're like, you want to make a horror movie? They're like, okay. And so they did. And so the quality in terms of critical and audience appeal has varied widely, but mostly they're just awful. I mean, there's a quality issue, but also, like, they are very heavy on the gore and the grossness. The stories, I mean, they all have, I don't want to say a supernatural element, they all have a fantastical element built into them. It's kind of required for the premise. But it's also a lot of people just being really nasty and horrible. And they're just not fun. And the completionist in me wants to finish. I've been watching them bits at a time, and I'm now on the fourth one, which is the reboot of the series. And I'm almost done with it. But yeah, I can confidently say, don't watch them. Don't okay. do it. But I have a thing you should watch.
Okay.
An actual good sci-fi thriller.
Oh.
Now, I say good. We all know I watch nothing but garbage. So it is possible my quality level is skewed.
Okay, fair enough.
But I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was very clever. The movie is called Coherence. It is available many places. I believe it is on Amazon Prime for free. And it is, some places I've heard it referred to as a horror. I think it's definitely a sci-fi thing. And it's not, there is some violence. It is minimal. There is some blood. It is minimal. I'd say there's nothing I would qualify as gore. So I don't really think of it as a horror. But it's basically 8, 30 or 40 something friends get together for a dinner party. Bless you. Bless you again. Producers over there. And they do it on the night when a comet is passing close to Earth. And then, like, shit gets weird. And it does a lot of, like, pretending it knows about quantum physics things.
Okay.
And it is one of those movies you really have to pay attention to, because it does a lot of, like, time skips and timelines and multiverses and things. And so you have to sort of pay attention. But I found it a very interesting story. I found it very well acted. I found it intriguing. I liked the way sort of the plot went. It covers territory that other movies have, but I think it covered them. It covered them in a perspective that was original to me.
Interesting.
It's pretty well done. It has nobody I'd ever heard of except Nicholas Brendan, or possibly Brendan Nicholas. The guy... That's the problem. These are his two names. I can't remember which one came first. He's the guy who played Xander on Buffy.
Oh, yeah.
And in the trippiest aspect of this entire movie, his character is an actor who hasn't done much in recent years, but once was a main character on an ongoing genre show. That genre show was called Roswell. and he played the main character named Joe. Now, here's the thing, and I may need to help, like, Craig or whatever, people from far away. There legit was a show called Roswell.
Yeah.
And it was this sort of show.
Mm-hmm.
That actor was never on that show.
No.
And there was no major character named Joe. So what the fuck is this about? Like, why would you make it a real show but fake everything else? If you wanted it real, he could just have been in Buffy. And I mean, spoiler alert, this doesn't figure into the plot.
Mm, okay.
Like, this is a dinner conversation and some people don't know each other. And they're like, that's, I mean, they do make a one-off joke because it's sci-fi, you know? And so, like, oh, this is stuff I dealt with all the time on my show. Like, a little joke there. But that was, like, it's not a major issue. So it could have just been Buffy. Or it could have been a fake, like, the combination of real and fake in making that character decision is blows my mind. I don't know what's happening, but I had to look it up at the time. I was like, was he in Roswell? No, he was not in Roswell.
When was this film made?
Pretty recent.
Yeah.
Within a couple of years, I think.
So they would have known they were making reference.
Yeah.
To a show that really existed.
Way after Roswell. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Roswell. They sort of rebooted, sequeled Roswell with a show called Roswell, New Mexico.
New Mexico, yeah.
Yeah, but no, this is the original, which I think ended in 2002. And
oh wow, I didn't realize it was that old.
Yeah. And they even got the timing. He was like, I was on it for about 4 years. That's about how long that show ran. Super weird, but I would recommend it. I found it interesting and thought-provoking, and I enjoyed my time. All the streaming services have been recommending it to me forever, and I've been planning to watch it, but in the trailers, it seems very intense. There's a lot of, like, arguing with each other, because weird shit starts happening, and people get panicked and stuff, and every time I'm like, I'm not really in the mood for that.
Mm.
It seems a little freaky. And then I think I watched a What Culture video that it referenced it. And in that, they, like, really got me intrigued. And I was like, I just need to fucking sit down and watch that. And so I did. And I liked it. So check that shit out. So what is your... walk me through your holiday schedule.
The thing is... last weekend, we went home because my niece has been in town and she was leaving on the 19th. So we went home on the 18th. That's when we saw Dad's storm damage and stuff. And what I didn't really fully realize when we did that was, as far as the family was concerned, that was going to be early Christmas get together.
Oh, surprise!
Yeah, I mean, I should have thought
in my version, they didn't tell you until you were leaving, and they were like, "See ya, don't come back till next year."
Right, but anyway, it was one of those things where afterwards people were talking about, oh yeah, it was great to get together for early Christmas or whatever.
Oh shit.
Oh yeah.
So it's not that they told you as you were leaving. They told you after it was done and you were back home.
They didn't tell me. They just talked about it like that was the case.
Oh no. Here's what happened.
And they're maybe really gonna get together.
It was not early Christmas. But you left and the rest of them collectively were like, I cannot fucking do that again next week.
Yeah.
I cannot put up with William that right. soon again.
Yeah, that's what
let's happened. Just say that was early Christmas and we'll sneak it in. We'll do it as though we assume he already knew. And then, you know, he's not going to say anything.
Right now, my one of my nephews is expecting a kid today. As like we're
the kid's going to deliver something or
no, as we're podcasting, they're chatting back and forth about how they're pretty sure that the baby's going to be born today.
Well, sucks to be that kid. Never going to get a birthday to themselves.
No,
always going to have to share it with Jesus.
I don't know how they know, because they thought it would, the baby would be born yesterday.
Doctors have ways of figuring this out.
No, I guess. But I mean, what I'm saying is that there was talk like it was going to happen yesterday.
They don't know when the stork's showing up. I mean, how could they possibly?
How can they know? And of course,
prevailing winds and all that.
But yeah, my brother, the one that lives in Alaska, this is his son and his wife. They're going to have their second child today, I guess. Everyone's talking about
your family got old when I wasn't looking.
It's
in my mind, your brother still just has kids in the house.
Yeah. So a little over a year ago, they had a daughter. My nephew and his wife had a daughter, and now they're having a son. And I'm told his name's going to be Pierce. So that's interesting.
I hear Pete Holmes does a whole bit about him. One of Pete Holmes's oldest bits is a really dumb one where he talks about a guy asking his friend named Pierce to bring back some alcoholic beverages for the party they're having. And it's Pierce, Pierce, get beers, Pierce, Pierce, bring us beers and some music, tears for fears, Pierce, three cheers for beers. And it's really dumb, and it was very popular, so he had to do it a lot. And then he invented a second one involving a guy telling his Latino friend about how they had a victory in their soccer game, which involves we won one one and but yeah. So those are the only two Pierces I know. Pierce Brosnan and Pierce Skippers.
Well, Pierce Brosnan is the only Pierce I've ever heard of.
Yeah, it's not a real name, is it?
I mean, I guess it was a last name in MASH, now that I think about it, but it wasn't.
Yeah. Which last names can be all sorts of gobbledygook good. But like Pierce Brosnan wasn't like named after his granddad or shit, right? Like that's not a real name, is it?
I don't know. I mean, I never really get on anybody for the names they pick for their kids.
No. I'm fine with it. But in my head, always Pierce Brosnan, like that was just sort of a British name. It's the thing again where like remembering that Sylvester Stallone's first name is Sylvester.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's weird. It's the thing. I'm like, wait, Pierce Brosnan's first name is Pierce.
Pierce, yeah.
And that's a verb. That's not a name.
Yeah.
What?
Interesting.
Pierce Morgan.
And he pronounces it differently too. And also, I refuse to consider that guy a member of the human race. So, fuck Pierce Morgan. This is what's going to get our podcast up on the charts. Is we are edgy enough to say fuck Pierce Morgan. we are pushing that envelope.
But the thing about the name Pierce, though, when I think about
Pierce, great nephew being named Pierce,
I think it's not really going to suit him until he's an adult. Like as a little kid, it's going to seem weird calling him Pierce. Now when he's an adult, okay, but calling a 5-year-old Pierce, I don't know. That just something about that doesn't fit my brain.
I mean, if he's wearing a suit. Also, there's like no diminutives.
Exactly.
Like, there's not a cute. The only thing I can think of is pee-pee, and that's not. No,
don't do that.
But like, what's another version? Like, that's it. Yeah.
I don't know. I was thinking about that
too. It might be a German thing. I did actually know somebody named Pierre. Like literally spelled like Pierce, but without the C or the E.
Well, his middle name's going to start with S. So I suppose they could call him PS or something, but that seems odd.
This is our son epilogue.
I mean, if his middle name started with J, you call him PJ. And then see, I've heard kids called PJ before, and that sounds
funny. Yes.
But his middle name is going to start with S. So postscript, yes. I don't know.
I am officially calling this kid epilogue from now on. This kid's name, epilogue. And their sister side note.
Or
interlude. Are you going to watch the new Matrix? Like you can as of today.
Yes, as of today you can. But Abby wants, I think she wants to like watch the original trilogy first.
I get that.
She wants to like marathon it or something, which we can't do today. So I guess we'll be waiting till the weekend, I guess, to, or maybe Christmas Day since we're not going anywhere.
There we go.
We might just watch a whole bunch of Matrix.
They were thinking of you. Yeah. We've never seen the third.
Oh.
And part of me is like, I should see that before seeing the fourth.
Well,
but mostly I'm not sure I give a shit about seeing the fourth.
To me, the Matrix films get worse, but they don't. It's not.
I mean, not to you. That's objective reality. Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure that would hold up in a court of law.
But it's not Iron Man worse or Pirates of the Caribbean worse. It's just worse. It's not. I mean, they're watchable, I think, but they're worse. Yeah, they're not as good.
I mean, I walked out of the second one thinking I liked it, but also in a way that like was already defensive. Like I walked out of there liking it, but somehow knowing everyone else wouldn't like it.
Well, did you like, I mean, did you think it, like to me, Iron Man is like, Iron Man was so good. And then the other two movies were not good as far as I'm concerned. It was terrible.
Back then I had Marvel goggles. So
oh.
I watched those movies thinking they were fine and only later. And also, I actually like Iron Man 3 a fair bit.
Oh, I didn't like it.
Iron Man 2, generally speaking, in the world, people think Iron Man 1 is the best. Iron Man 2 is definitely the worst, and Iron Man 3. And some people put 3 above 1, but it's usually really? Just a little below. Yeah.
Because, people really like because the to me, the original Iron Man still stands as one of the best superhero movies of all time. So really, the other two Iron Man movies couldn't have probably met my expectations. And I mean, I've seen Iron Man recently, and I was like, yeah, it holds up. This is a fantastic superhero movie. But anyway,
have you seen the trailer for Everything Everywhere All at Once or whatever it's called?
No, I've heard of it, but no, I don't think I've seen that.
It looks amazing to the point that unfortunately have unreserved hope about it.
I did see it just yesterday. It's like a multiverse.
Yeah, with Michelle Yeoh. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, she looks like she's doing an amazing job in it.
And the whole cast looks really exciting. We got Jamie Lee Curtis in there and all sorts of stuff. But what I love is in the trailer, there's a guy who sort of gives a little bit of a speech, and his voice sounded familiar, but I was like, that was from decades ago. I'm just being racist. And then I looked it up, and I'm not just being racist. That is the guy who played Data in The Goonies and Short Round in Temple of Doom. And his voice is distinctive enough that I recognized it. I'm not racist. You're racist. So I was very pleased about that. But no, it looks amazing to the point that if it's bad, I'm going to be hurt. Like, well, my hope is up. I can't not have my hope up.
I think even if it's not very good, I think we're going to see some actors show some range that they don't usually get to show. And I think that'll be amazing by itself.
and some studios. As people have pointed out, this appears to be an action film, and this is the first time A24 has tried.
Oh, sure, yeah.
An action film. And A24 is a fucking amazing studio.
Yeah, A24 is amazing.
I mean, so yeah, I'm super excited, recklessly so.
But yeah, well, I mean, we'll watch the Matrix. I mean, again, Matrix, the other two Matrix movies weren't good, but they're not unwatchable to me. And so we'll watch those three first, and then we'll watch this new one and see if I have a feeling it's not going to be very good, but.
I think this is probably going to end up where the newest Ghostbusters did, where I'm just like, I don't need more to this. So I'm kind of done, which I think is a healthy thing I'm doing. Of actually being like, you know what? I can be done with this. It's not for me anymore, and I don't have to slavishly follow it. We will see. I am curious. I mean, I'm sure I'll go online and read about it or whatever, but let's do a question while we still got time. We only have two things that the hat has forwarded to us. So unless the hat is holding out, we need more stuff. But yeah, you do it.
Azure Talon wants to know.
Azure Talon always wants to know. I should be fair. Azure Talon keeps us in content, so I do appreciate that. It's lousy content, but it's better than nothing, arguably. You're welcome.
He asks, have either of you dealt with rejection-sensitive dysphoria? Do you think it's a real enough thing to have such an official name? Thoughts on living with it or getting past it? There's a file attached here.
All right. I'll tell you what, this is unprecedented. I want to pause so we can figure out what the fuck he's talking about, and then we can discuss it. And we're back. I was doing classified acts while William was brushing up on, what's it called again?
It's called rejection sensitive dysphoria.
All right, now what is it?
Which I have heard of, but I'm not I'm not brushed up on, so to speak. Well, like a lot of things with official sounding names, it's something that's more complicated than people realize. Like, you know, people throw around ADHD like they know what it is, and then when you go into the DSM and read about it, it's like, oh, that's a little different than people, you know, than people think it is or whatever. So this is a pretty complex.
I realize now I've made a huge mistake. Thing. You be the one to shut read up.
It seems to be associated with ADHD, actually. A lot of people with ADHD have it, but I'll go over a couple of questions that this test asks to see if you have this issue. So
I've never hated you more. All right, come on.
Do you experience sudden intense bouts of rage when your feelings are hurt? Do you experience sudden intense bouts of extreme sadness when you think you have been rejected or criticized? Do you feel anxious in social situations because you assume that no one likes you? Things like that.
Hmm.
And there's several more. I mean, some of these, you know, in answer to Azure Talon's question, I can answer some of these questions in the affirmative, but not most of them.
Yeah, from what I'm hearing here, it seems a little bit of a boutique diagnosis. Like, these are things, some of which I have experienced, but they are tied to other things that I'm already aware of.
Like, one is, are you your own harshest critic? Well, I think, yeah, obviously I am, but
you definitely are.
But I a lot of these questions refer to having out of control emotions, which I'm not immune to by any means, but that, you know, almost nothing I suffer from is that one of the symptoms, you know, extreme emotionality, because I'm a kind of a, you know, mostly people accuse me of being a robot. So if a symptom has a high level of emotionality, it's not often going to apply to me. Although I do.
I don't think you're a robot, William.
I mean, I get
nearly efficient enough.
I mean, I get emotional about things sometimes, and sometimes in a way that I can't manage, but
yeah, but that's mostly just Korean soap operas, and we all get that way.
Like, okay, do you avoid meeting new people or trying new things because of your fear of rejection or criticism is so strong? Now, see, I would, no, but I do sometimes avoid meeting new people if I feel like I'm just going to say something stupid and offend these people. So maybe if I don't go.
No, your mental health problems are definitely their own bag. I mean, I think we're real close to just calling it William syndrome. I had an idea recently. I want to make a collection of profiles and vignettes of alternate universe Williams. And they all have drastically different lives, but the core is still Williamness. And of course, the first is, of course, Willie Wright, extreme jackass billionaire.
Oh, right. Sure.
But then, like, what happened actually is the second one is going to be you as the proud owner of the largest car dealership in the Tri-County area, somewhere in southern Texas, I think.
Okay.
And things like this. So we could throw in some other ones here, including Robot Wave. I'm realizing now the working title might just be William Syndrome.
So to answer these diagnoses, when they give something a name like this, it becomes a very specific thing that you diagnose in a very specific way.
Right.
But it also becomes a thing that the popular culture throws around for just about anything. So I would say that from the diagnostic standpoint, no, I've never suffered from this or even anything like it. But I have a feeling that some of the things I say or talk about could be construed as something like this by the popular culture if they treat this terminology the same way they treat ADHD, which they apply that basically to anybody who they think has a hard time focusing on anything, you know, and they just over apply it in colloquially, you know. But then also, but when it's diagnosed, you have to follow the guide, and actually the diagnostic guide for these types of things is very specific.
Yeah,
and you can't, you know, it's easy for a person to actually not have the thing. It's easier for a person to not be diagnosed with it than to be diagnosed with it. But does this sound familiar to you?
Not at all. Not at all.
Okay.
But the symptoms do. In a way, though, that I'm like, I can think of a couple of other things that would result in these same symptoms. Hmm. Some of which aren't, in my opinion, clinical. Basically, a manifestation of anxiety could do all of this. I personally used to, in certain circumstances, get very defensive and emotionally out of control when being criticized in certain ways.
Okay.
Trish has a story that she thinks is hilarious about when I did this in front of her and a friend of ours one time that still traumatizes me to this day, but she thinks it's super funny. But I've done this many times, mostly in my younger days and also in my pre-medicated days.
Mm.
And then social anxiety is just a thing. Like,
yeah,
people have social anxiety, and lots of people avoid social situations because of that anxiety. Now this is specifically sort of a fear of rejection, but I mean, that is a form I've known a lot of people to know. So having all this wrapped up in a specific thing is not something I'm familiar with or I have considered.
I mean, it's possible that some people would diagnose me with something like this based on, like, the way these questions are laid out. You've got to be kind of an eager to please type of personality. which I don't think I am, but some people would, because I, even though I'm not eager to please, I'm reluctant to offend. And so some people, that's the same thing. And they would just put me in that
category. But also I would question the need for that in this circumstance. You don't have to be eager to please. You just have to attribute a lot of self-worth to the opinions of others, or more accurately, to your perception of the opinions of others. That sure, is not the same as a people pleaser.
I suppose that's true. But again, that gets problematic for me because I don't think my sense of self-worth is that much tied up in what other people think. I just have a very specific impact that I want to have on people, which is neutral or good. You know, I don't want to have any kind of negative impact at all. And that really concerns
me. Your self-worth is almost exclusively based on your own. I don't think your sense of self-worth is tied to other people's views of you at all. I think yours is based on your perception of how shit should work. And so you will have an interaction with somebody that they may find less than ideal, but not particularly problematic. But it doesn't match what your standards were for how that should have gone. And then you will feel terrible about yourself.
Yeah, pretty much.
I know this because you have had so many interactions with me in which I have felt very neutral about the experience, but clearly my response you've viewed as bad and you're awful for it.
Yeah.
Pretty much. I think you almost have the opposite. I think your self-worth is based entirely on the vision you have mapped out in your head on how things should work and how you perceive things working, irrespective of how actual people feel.
Yeah, that's probably right. Yeah, that's probably right. Well,
in fact, I feel like you are the best argument I have ever encountered for us living in a simulation, except I say us and I mean you. I now think I'm just a computer program here. to bounce shit off of you. So what I'm saying is your whole attitude causes me existential crisis at all times.
Okay. I just don't think.
I only keep doing this podcast because I'm afraid if I stop, I won't exist anymore.
Oh, that's awesome.
I legit don't know what happens when I end the Zoom call.
I guess I don't either. I don't think of myself as a reliable judge of what other people think of things.
Predictably, I would agree.
I mostly try to not speculate because like, I don't know, so I'm not going to worry about it. But then, like you say, that leaves me alone with my own ideas and thoughts with no input, reliable input from any other source. And my own ideas, as you've just pointed out, can be very unforgiving. And I can be very unforgiving toward myself. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a thing I really have to.
And I mean, I think there's variants that a lot of people struggle with. I frequently talk about when I will hang out with, I'll talk a lot with my therapist about this, when I will hang out with my gaming group. And she's like, so how do you know it's been a good gaming session? And I thought about it and I'm like, if I don't go home feeling like I was an asshole, it genuinely has nothing to do with how much they appeared to enjoy or not to
enjoy. Yeah, right.
It's if I think I was a jerk. And part of that is my friends are quite forgiving in how much they enjoy with the whole thing, and they're not super emotionally demonstrative in that way. Anytime if I ask them, they're like, yeah, it's great. And it will not get better or worse from that response, sort of however it goes. So I judge it entirely on like, was I a jerk to them? regardless of what may actually have happened.
Well, this week I visited with a couple of my fellow students on a Zoom call.
Yeah.
And
And they asked you what it was like during the Carter administration.
Well, I mean, there was, I mean, the my age difference was, you know, did come up a couple times. But they had, these two had visited in the past and, you know, and knew each other kind of already a little bit. So there were, the interaction started out, I'm asking them some questions. I'm trying to get to understand where they come from and stuff. And so they start asking me questions. So I end up doing most of the talking because it was one of those deals where, well, they already knew everything about each other and they wanted to know things about me. I didn't know anything about them, but I got to a point where I was answering more questions than I was asking.
So they tricked you.
Well, no.
They hold all the cards now.
I don't know. But when it was over, of course, I felt terrible because I did most of the talking. I didn't really learn anything about them that I wanted to learn. I was thinking some of the things I said were stupid or incomplete or you know, not quite accurate. If I would have been thinking about it, I would have said it this way instead of that way. You know what I typically do when I do it with the podcast.
I'm going to say, this is how I assume you spend all of your alone time.
So, yeah, I felt terrible afterwards. And it's like, you know, and my Abby, who heard most of my side of it, you know, because she could hear me talking, was like, you sounded fine. I said, I mean, I understand and I do appreciate when she gives me input because I know she's being honest, but I just can't get over, you know, feeling like crap, like, oh, I just should have kept, you know, I should have asked more questions. I shouldn't have said that, you know. I think I did make, well, no, I'm not even gonna get into that. I was gonna start speculating about the things that I might have done wrong, but that's the whole problem, is I do that, right? I think of all these things that I said this wrong, I hurt this person's feelings somehow. I'm sure I did because they shifted a little this way when I said whatever. It's like, stop doing that.
Holy crap, you might have this thing that Azure Talent made up.
Well, and that's what I'm getting at, is that sometimes things like this, when you look at online sources or you look in the actual DSM or whatever, you'll go, well, that doesn't really seem to fit. But some people who diagnose would go, well, it still does fit because of this, you know.
Well, and some people would also go, the important thing is not does it fit the categorization, but will the prescribed treatment be effective for you?
Exactly. That's also
because when the rubber meets the road, that's the important part, which I think happens a lot with ADHD. There might not be perfect diagnosis, but ADHD prescribed behaviors and medications are pretty specific and they do specific things. And if that will help you, there you go.
Yeah, and the research on a lot of ADHD approaches is pretty positive, actually. So
yeah,
you're right about all of that. So I don't know. So it's hard to answer. I mean, I would probably have to see a counselor or a clinical psychologist, someone who is expert in this, to know for sure if they would diagnose me with it. It doesn't look compelling to me, but that's, of course, it wouldn't. Probably to the person who has it.
Bring this up in your classes.
Yeah, I'm in classes.
This is on point. Like,
yeah.
We don't know. We don't know what the fuck we're talking about. If you know, or if anybody listening does, go to the blog and talk to us about it, because this is very interesting. So go to themagicaltalkinghat.com and tell us your experience with it, your understanding of it, whatever. Or just bullshit about it like we did, because why not? Who's gonna listen?
Piers, I mean, Morgan? That's a good question. Why not? Because, you know, people don't often discuss
it's not
these
a good
things.
Question it's very no, it much is. Not a good idea, you know, to randomly speculate on clinical diagnosis.
It's a good idea to discuss. I mean, people talk about, you know, physical ailments all the time. You know, what's going on with them, or what the doctor said, what kind of medication they're taking, what kind of treatment they're having. There's no reason we can't talk about mental illness in the same way. And you're right. It opens up conversations where people are, like you said, speculating about things they don't know anything about, but it's better than not talking about it at all, or having some kind of taboo about against talking.
I do agree. Talking about mental health is good. I do it all the time. here and other places. Self-diagnosing or amateur diagnosing, I'm opposed to.
Well, yeah, you've got to be real.
Which is what we're doing here, because William is confident he doesn't have this, and I'm confident he does, and well, one of us can be right.
I'm not confident in either one of those things. As I said, I would have to see someone.
All right, then I win, because I'm confident. So you got it. Now you're stuck with it. Way to go, Eisertown. Gave William rejection thingy. This is getting back at us for giving him cancer.
You are correct, though. Self-diagnosis of medical conditions or mental illnesses.
Or just popular diagnosis. Don't crowdsource that shit.
Although I think it's reasonable for a person to do some research and maybe go, well, I should probably see a doctor about this because this looks concerning. I shouldn't diagnose myself, but I should. What this thing I'm experiencing is probably significant enough for me to see a professional. Right?
Folks, I've created an online poll, and all it says is, how sure are you that I have this thing? And I want you to all go and rate from 1 to 5.
What do you think is the proper use of doing online research about a thing? I mean, should a person not do it at all? Or
I'm opposed to research.
No, you're not. Are you really?
I mean, for me personally, I don't like it. No. I think it's as with all things, learn everything you can, but always keep at the forefront of your brain. You don't know shit, and the internet also doesn't know shit. So no, absolutely.
Right, keep
a lot of my major mental health decisions in my life, both in terms of therapeutic and in terms of medication based, were based on the fact that people around me are like, dude, you're fucked up. And specifically people in different aspects of my life where I'm like, there's no reason they both should feel this way unless there's something to it. But you always have to, like, you can't take it as gospel. And like, I know certain young people who currently are under the impression that they have autism, and maybe they do, and they're going to get checked out for it. But I also have the very sneaking suspicion that they've seen things online such that they kind of think autism sounds cool. And that's kind of why they want to, like, I've seen no indication from this individual that they actually are exhibiting any sort of behavior like that. But I don't know any more than they know. And I mean, I think it's fine that they're going, and this is the right answer. These young people's parents took them to the doctor, and the doctor's like, we'll do the thing. And the doctor didn't say, I don't think you've got it, but we'll do the thing. Or I think you've got it, let's do the thing. Doctor said, we'll do the thing, because there's a thing where you can have a screening and all that. Right. And why the hell not? But yeah, I think this is a deal too. People like that. There are popular diagnoses people have. People like to assume they have something because then they have an excuse for some behavior. And these are all very problematic. I know, because I do it a lot. Depending on the circumstance, I might have ADHD, I might have anxiety, I might have depression, I might have borderline personality disorder, I might have kleptomania, I might have pyromania, I might have nymphomania. It depends on the social context. It's just very helpful.
I might just be an asshole.
But again, not a doctor. I'm gonna go in and get an asshole screening. That sounds terrible.
Don't do that.
That's not what that means. All right, but in all seriousness, if you are listening and you are more familiar with this, which I assume Azure Talent is, and maybe others, talk to us about it, because we do find it interesting. And I'm sick of hearing William just make shit up about it. So go check that out. We gotta wrap this up. I got things to do. That's why we had to schedule it weird. So please write into us, themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. We need more things like this to talk about. Otherwise, it's gonna be a lot about The Witcher. You watch out. I'm playing this video game, Biomutant. If we don't got enough things, I'm just gonna spend a whole episode talking about Biomutant, and you do not want that. I don't want that. Nobody wants that. And also, otherwise, next week, William will just give us his critical analysis of the fourth Matrix movie. And I mean, I just pooped a little just thinking about that. No, let's not have that. So write in themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. It was fear poop, just for the record. It was not, wasn't a happy poop or any, like, no, it's bad, bad poop. Wait, man, there are so many great episode titles we have here. It's gonna be William syndrome, but there's so many. Bad poop would be nice, you know, lots of things like that. Rejection thingy, also good. All right. Yeah, and go to the blog, magicaltalkinghead.com, and talk if you've been affected by any of the issues brought up in this episode of Magical Talking Hat. Go there. And then listen again next week. And I hope everybody has a good, or barring that, quick and painless as possible, holiday weekend.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.